100%. I've been saying this for a long time, which is anybody who could figure out how to employ the stay-at-home mom workforce is going to make billions of dollars.
Dude, this morning, my friend had a 40th birthday party and he rented out an entire water park.
This morning?
From like 7:30 a.m. to like 10 a.m. And I went to it. Yeah, it was like me and Ramon and Neville. And then like, you know, David Perel, he was there and a bunch of other guys were there. And it was so fun. We had this whole park to ourselves. And then I came home and like threw up and went to sleep. Like
did you caught something because you threw up out of nostalgia. Why are you puking?
I didn't when I was a kid, I used to love that stuff. And then I did all these like slides
you
and
just
like
went too hard
and like going through them. You go like these slides are it's kind of hard to explain, but you're like in the, you know, those tubes that like go in twisties, whatever.
Yeah.
Like it just made me sick to my stomach. I was like on the ride home. I was like, Neville, I think I might throw up. Can you unlock the window? I can't believe how like old I got.
You savage. You threw up out the window. You didn't.
No, I didn't do it out the window, but I came home and I got sick and I just had to lay down. I cannot believe how life has changed.
Like you didn't even drink. just the action, just the movement.
Well, did you go to rides at Disney?
My daughter's two, so I did only like the Dumbo ride, like the most simple rides.
I don't like.
Teacup's
I think
it's a little crazy.
I think I would have done like the big stuff. I think I would throw up at this point. I couldn't handle it. It was horrible. But man, this is why Austin is awesome. So like, okay, so David Perel, I don't know him that well, but just two blocks up, there's this restaurant. And me and Sarah went out to breakfast and he was there. And so we knew who each other's were and we just said, what's good? We're going to go hang out. Last night, I had this guy over named Chris Williamson. Do you know who that is?
No.
Who's that? He's like a popular YouTuber. And he just DM'd me and he said, I'm in Austin. Do you want to hang out? And I go, yeah, just come over for dinner. We're just like constantly just seeing people. It's pretty wild. It's a small, weird, it's like a lot of like cool people here, but it's a small town.
Yeah, that used to be the case in San Francisco, you know, because you would just bump into people everywhere that were like doing the same thing, like-minded people who are also in the same game. But I don't know. I moved out of the city now. So like, you know, I'm in the burb. My neighbor is 80 years old. You know, if I bump into him, you know, he's telling me about like, you know, crochet or something like that. So it's not the same.
Well, it's awesome here. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. You want to get into some stuff? You have a bunch of really interesting things to talk about. I've got less interesting things to talk about.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's pick one.
Actually, let me lead with mine because I have less stuff. This is pretty much the only thing, but you talked to this person. All right, this woman named Rebecca Zamalo. You talked to her, right?
Yeah, I think you butchered her last name. Zamarolo, I think.
Zamarolo, sorry. Like all right, so I did a call with her as well. I DM'd her and we started talking. This woman is amazing. So basically, awesome. It's her and her husband. Her husband's name's Matt. They're partners on this. She has a YouTube channel. It's anyone listening to this, you only probably know about it if you have kids. So it's meant for children. It's like acting, like fictional
it's
stuff.
Like age like 6 to 8, 6 to 10-ish maybe, where it's like, it's not the like absolute beginner kiddie Cocomelon type of stuff. It's like somewhere between. And yeah, they basically like, it's a little show. It's almost like a TV show, you know, whether it's Blue's Clues or whatever else they create like, you know, these videos, these little 10-minute videos that are entertaining.
And on her personal channel, she's got like 10 or 12 million subscribers. She has seven channels total. So six other channels, one for her dog, one for her husband, one for like this for gaming, just like all types of stuff. She's releasing 8 videos a week. They have a team of like 8 or 6 people maybe. And she kind of told me a little bit about some of like the business numbers. My mind was blown. It was astounding.
Unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. Did you talk to her about her business? We can't like, I didn't ask her if I could say anything and she didn't like that. But
don't put that on blast. But yeah, I like, you know, the dog has 10 times, maybe 20 times more subscribers than we do on YouTube. Like, it's like, oh, this is my dog's gaming channel. And it'll have like 400,000 subscribers or something crazy. So she gets YouTube, has, I mean, 10 million subscribers is no joke. And the amount of production, the content output, like just that thing you said, sounded like, oh, 6, 7, 8 videos a week. Like, okay, so they do a video, they release a video pretty much every day.
But they're like 40 minute long sometimes.
Yeah, they're like long videos with like storylines about like, and she'll be like, you know, we moved into this new house and there was like this weird door in my bedroom. So we created this storyline about this like secret passage that takes you down, and then there's a villain inside, and the villain is my husband, and like that's the like then they create a whole play, basically a little screenplay, and they shoot it. And while we were talking, she's like, yeah, downstairs there's like eight people for our crew, like our kind of film audio editors, whatever, that are all here. And she's like, yeah, my life is crazy.
All right, so here's the deal. Things are changing fast in the tech world and the internet marketing world. And that's a big deal because you have to know which trends to stay on top of in order to market better, in order to acquire customers for cheap, and so you can run your business as efficiently as possible. Staying on top of all those trends is a pain in the butt, though. And so the folks at HubSpot have made this amazing report. It has a very official sounding name because it is a very official document. It's the 2024 State of Marketing Report. They've looked at millions, tens of millions of bits of data to find the top marketing trends that have the most immediate impact on your business. And so what HubSpot did was they surveyed over 1,400 marketing pros from across the world, and they looked at what are people using effectively, what's not working, more importantly, and they've been able to compile it in a really easy to read document. So if you want to learn ways how to optimize for social or how to boost engagement or how to strike the right balance between privacy but still being personal with your customers, go to HubSpot.com/state of marketing to get the free copy, or just Google HubSpot State of Marketing and it will come up. Check it out.
It was wild. And she was telling me about different stuff. And so there's this guy named Dar Mon. So his first name is Dar, D-H.
I know him well, yeah.
Okay, so you're friends with him?
I'm not friends with him. My wife either knew him like in college or something like that or whatever. But then we've done some deals with them, him and his wife, around like influencer content.
So he's got 13.8 million subscribers. And it's kind of lame what he does, like lame in that it's not going to fit what we do. But basically, it's like Hallmark Channel videos. Like one was like someone bullies an autistic kid and the reaction is crazy. And it's like a fictional Hallmark video. I think they like children watch it, I guess, to understand like values. And he's got something like 100 employees and he's brand new to this, like within
like a 3-year thing.
Yeah, like 2-3 years. 100 employees, and they pump these videos out to the point of like right now he's got 6.3 billion views, and it is crazy. And across all their platforms, their videos have been viewed 27 billion times. It's some of these YouTubers, I'm just blown away at how big their businesses are. And when I'm thinking about it, and I talked to Rebecca, I'm like, this actually isn't that hard. I could do this. And if you dedicate like 40 or 50 hours a week, if you start from scratch, you can get big really fast. But you have to treat it like a job, not a hobby, just like anything else.
Yeah, like a business, not even a job. Because you're managing a bunch of people and you got to have a product for customers and things like that. So yeah, I totally agree. I'm on his Twitter. So it says like new videos Monday through Thursday, family friendly, kid approved, right? That is a product you're offering. We release on these days. We are kid friendly, rated G. Here's what you're going to get out of this. And that's my studio company or whatever. And I think, but by the way, before this guy, I think he was doing like a cannabis company.
An e-commerce thing. Like that. Yeah. They have an e-commerce and cannabis business, unrelated. So,
he's doing all kinds of stuff.
It's amazing. It's incredible. These YouTubers, like, I'm blown away because there's so many that you have no idea who they are, but they have these empires that could be potentially making tens of millions of dollars a year.
Yeah. I also think, it's really hard to do what they're doing. It's not for everybody. And I guess that's kind of obvious, but I guess what I'm trying to say is even if you could do it, not everybody could do it, but even if you could do it, doesn't mean you should do it. Like, this is such a hard thing to do, to get on that treadmill and say, I'm going to produce awesome content 5 days a week, nonstop. And if I ever stop, the algorithm punishes me and my subscribers leave my channel and my Patreon people stop giving me money and I don't have ad content for my sponsors. And if I ever, just don't feel like being in front of the camera, like it doesn't work. There's no substitute teacher to step in here and step into this business. So I think it is a really valuable, I think it's a powerful business when you have it, because anytime you have the trust of millions of people who like your entertainment, that's great. But man, I don't think it's worth it. I'm not even just saying that theoretically, like I've thought about doing it and I'm like, there's no way this is worth it for me.
And that's what I said to her. And
So this guy Dar, I think he's not like the face, I believe, in most of his videos. I think he's in close to none of his videos or something like that. With her, she was like, yeah, but we've got all these seven other channels now, so we diversify beyond just me. And I agree with you. I think that that's a hard treadmill, but I would say to the other side is like everything is that, right? If you start anything, like you just got to work at it for a long time.
I think I could share this, but when I did the episode, when I recorded with Hasan Minhaj, who's like, you know, comedian, he's on TV shows, stuff like that. He had asked me at one point during the thing, I think the episode's coming out soon. He had asked me like, you know, like what would you do next step if you were me?
And asked you that.
Yeah. Like kind of like, okay, from a business point of view, what would you do next? And, on the pod itself, I don't think I gave him a great answer. Like, I think in the pod, we were talking more about like, how would you invest your money? And I was like, you know, here's kind of the thought process I would go down. It was kind of a boring, lame answer, to be honest. But afterwards, when we were hanging out, I told him what I think is actually the real answer for this. I said, you know, everybody should do what fits them. Like something that looks exhausting to me might feel amazing to somebody else. So, you know, don't take my word for it. But let's just pretend I'm just going to give you my 2 cents and you could throw it away if you don't like it. I said, if I was you, this touring business model seems awesome. Cause I was at your show. It was, you know, like 4,000 seats sold out. Average ticket's like $150. And you just did that 8 times in this city. And then you're going to go to 50 cities on this tour. Like you could just add it up and be like, wow, you can make a lot of money touring. And then there's no limit to that. Like, yeah, this was a 4,000 person auditorium, but you could do your same set in front of 30,000 people in a bigger stadium. If like, you know, Chris Rock or Dane Cook or whoever these other people would do that size tours. So I said, you got a business model that works. But the problem is you're a new dad like me. Like, I can't imagine being on the road, going to 50 cities. Like we've been invited to many things and I've been like, yeah. And then I'm like, traveling is so hard with little kids. I got to leave my wife. I don't really want to leave the house for an extended period of time right now. Like I like being home. So I was like, I would want to get rid of the travel component. I said, well, okay, how do you do that? You can't have a substitute teacher come in and say your jokes on stage. That doesn't work. And so what I had told him afterwards, I go, if I was you, I would stash cash and I would create a 2-year runway where I could just work on one thing. And that is creating the next Hamilton. And he's like, what? And I was like, I would use your storytelling, your comedic abilities. I would create Hamilton for brown people. Because that's like his audience, his demographic is like heavily skewed Asian. And I said, I'll create Hamilton for brown people. I don't even know what that means. I'll just take that and say, I'm doing that. And then he's like, you know, he reacted to it or whatever. And I was like, the reason I would do that is because then you get the business model of touring, but it's not you on the stage.
Yeah, and so you own can that sit IP. Back.
And you only have to create it once. And like Mamma Mia has been running for fucking 16 years and has done over $600 million in ticket sales. And, you know, like Hamilton's done over $1 billion in ticket sales and it's the same story. It's the same songs. It's the same jokes every night done by a different cast of kind of like, you know, fungible or interchangeable pieces. So you're not super dependent on any one talent. Like you can switch out people if you need. So I was like, that to me seems like an amazing business model. I would do that. So that's kind of my example of this YouTube thing is like, you can also do the YouTube thing, but in a different way. Like, I think it's cool that Dar isn't the face of his videos. So then it's more like a production company. It's like a TV show he's created, not so much a vlog.
Dude, there's this guy. People are going to laugh at me because I don't know, or if you know who this is. Is it Andrew Lloyd Webber? I forget the guy's name.
Is that the Phantom of the Opera guy?
Yeah. And did he do Joseph something Jesus, Radical? What's that Broadway show where it's like Radical Jesus or like Jesus's... It's like about Jesus and they're
Jesus
like
Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yes, fucking
what you're looking for.
Yes.
So you did School of Rock, Phantom of the Opera, and Evita, which are all big hits that I've heard of. And then I've never heard of Jesus Christ Superstar, but yeah, that's apparently like done in the 70s.
Yeah, he's a billionaire.
So I looked up. So when I thought of that play model, I was like, is the play business a good business?
It could be.
And I think it can be. So the top IP definitely accrues like a shit ton of value. Like I said, if you can go look at like Lion King has grossed like $2 billion. That's the number one stage play.
What's and number two and three?
Hamilton is like getting up there. It's like number two or three now, but it's like very new. So it'll surpass Lion King if it just keeps going. There's like Phantom of the Opera. There's Mamma Mia. There's like, so you take the top 10 and they're all doing like hundreds of millions in gross sales. Okay. Now you don't get to keep the gross sales, but I think you could do this in a way that works. So like the guy who created Hamilton, Lin-Manuel, whatever his name is.
Yeah. But did the author get paid too on that one?
So this guy, Lin, who's the creator of it, he has like a 7% royalty or something like that.
Wow.
So he's made like tens of millions of dollars off of the profits. They actually crowdfunded the thing. So what they did, I don't have the full story in front of me because I'm just trying to say this off the top of my head from memory. But I think what they did was to raise the money to create the thing. They had like a bunch of patrons basically chip in money and they all get to keep a profit share after a certain amount of money had been recouped. And so that investment has been paid over like 10 times. So if I was Hasan Minhaj, I'd be like, there's Web3 shit going on. Interesting. A lot of people flush with cash buying into shit. Okay, cool. Digital tickets, NFTs. Okay, what can I do with this? And I would basically raise $10 million through an NFT presale of the show and in different tiers. Like, you know, some of the tickets have backstage passes attached to them. Some of them don't, whatever.
That's interesting.
And I would just let people buy this. I'd raise $10 million. I'd use the $10 million to go into a bunker to create whatever the hell Hamilton for black people is. And then I would
Hamilton for brown people, for Indians.
Oh yeah, sorry, not black people, brown people. So then I would take that show on the road and I would just try to, I would be like, yeah, I know it's hard, but like being a successful stand-up comedian was also like a 0.1% success rate or whatever, you know, to get to where he's at. So like, yeah, you want to get to the 0.1% success rate, but this time with a superior business model that doesn't require your face on the stage saying the jokes.
Yeah, I think that's sick. I think that's a great idea. I think that's wonderful. I think, and that could be incredibly creatively fulfilling.
I wish I had said it on the spot. It's like one of those when you're in an argument and then like later you're in the shower, you're like, oh fuck, I should have said that. That's what happened to me. But luckily we're still hanging out at that moment. So I was able to tell him, you know, then.
This is a cool idea. I think in the next couple episodes, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to bring in, I'm going to do some research on the Broadway business or like, I don't know, theater, I guess. What do you call it? Theater.
Yeah.
It's actually an interesting idea. I was always curious because American Idiot, basically they did this. So Billy Joe Armstrong Green Day wrote American Idiot, the album, the song. They turned it into a rock musical.
Right.
You didn't have to be there. They didn't have to be there. You know,
exactly.
And they got paid a lot from it.
Book of Mormon. Let me see how much Book of Mormon has made. Mormon revenue. $500 million has been the gross ticket sales of Book of Mormon. And then if you did something like a Hamilton or like a Lion King or whatever, you could take that same IP, those characters, you have merch, you have like other, that IP is, you, the key is you got to own the IP. And, you know, so I think, you know, when Book of Mormon launched, it says it was bringing in 19 million per month. So like, I don't know what South Park generated lifetime, but like, I bet it's kind of like on par with that. Or, you know, I guess South Park's probably a bigger success.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. South Park. I didn't know this happened, actually. Looks like a couple months ago, the South Park creators signed a $900 million deal for more episodes for 6 years with Viacom CBS. That's insane. I didn't know that.
That's actually amazing. That's amazing.
Right now is the best time ever to be a production company or an IP holder. And we said this a long time ago. Remember I said someone needs to, there's all these platforms now. You got, at the time it was Netflix, Amazon Prime. And then I said Disney Plus was going to come out. It hadn't come out yet. And then there was like, you know, there's Hulu. There's all these different platforms. Apple TV Plus came out. They all want original content. They're all hungry for content. And they are betting billions of dollars budgeting every single year to buy content. I think Netflix or Amazon or something, they're paying like $6 billion per year for content, for new content production. And so it is the best time ever to be a seller of content. And at the time we had said somebody should create YC for content. Basically the way that Y Combinator helped produce software startups. And it just said, hey, two engineers. Okay. You're 21 years old. You graduated from Stanford. All right, come here. This is essentially like a business school, but you're going to create a little business. And, you know, maybe you can sell to Facebook or Google, or you'll end up becoming the next Airbnb. You'll go public. I think the same thing with the content, where you would come in as two kind of like creatives. You have a pitch for an idea of a show you want to create. You have 3 months to basically create the sizzle reel or the pilot or whatever. And then there's a demo day with a bunch of buyers from all the big streaming platforms, and they just buy options on your shit. And I just think that's a beautiful, I still think that's a great business idea. And it's only been proven when South Park signs a $900 million deal with CBS. Shonda Rhimes, I think, signed a couple $100 million deal with Netflix to produce 6 shows. Reese Witherspoon sold her production company, which didn't even have that, like,
for like a billion,
for like $1 billion. Like, this is, you know, this is tech startup money that's being sold for TV content, which is amazing. So, you know, that's
and way more fun than building software.
Way cooler than that. And I think today, Hasan Minhaj also announced his production. He created a production company today. He announced it, like 100, I think it's called 186K Productions or something like that, which is smart. Again, like, once you see Reese Witherspoon and other people's production companies selling, and we had Rob Dyrdek on, I think he said he sold his production company for 200 something million.
He said that he's walking away with 100, him personally.
Yeah. So, like, I think, you know, at least 100 million, probably closer to 200 million. He sold his production company, which basically just produced shows for MTV. That's a great business to be in. And I think it's only going to get better for like this kind of 5-year period. And then these platforms are going to go away, like Paramount Plus, and, you know, like Quibi died. You know, Paramount Plus, what the fuck is that? That's gonna
die. Dude, I love Paramount Plus.
Why do you love Paramount? What's the one show you love on there? There's gotta be one.
They have like a lot of documentaries and shit. Paramount, it's like older, it's like old school a little bit.
Or like Peacock. Are you a subscriber to Peacock?
Hell,
like,
yeah.
Dude, oh my God.
Dude,
Peacock, dude.
Peacock, I literally was just, when I was laying in bed, when I wasn't feeling good, I watched The Office on Peacock. Peacock is the only place that you can get The Office.
It's NBC's one, right?
Yeah, you could. The Office and Parks and Rec. It's the only place you can get it. And then, so I use it for Parks and Rec, The Office, and AP Bio. Or have you seen AP Bio?
No, I don't know what that is.
It's like with like the
class I took in high school.
It's like the main guy from It's Always Sunny, you know, Dee's brother, Dennis.
Yeah.
It's sick. But Peacock's good, man. Peacock, it's just, it all costs so much money.
I was looking to shit on one of them. I thought Peacock was safe. But I guess
no. Peacock's cool, dude.
You're sponsored by Peacock, I guess. I don't know what's going on here.
I pay for all of them.
Get this man a free subscription.
You want to do something? Let's, dude. You have so much stuff here. Let's just bang through it.
Yeah, let's do one. Okay, so let's do
this tweet thing.
Okay, let's do this tweet. So this guy Suhail, who created Mixpanel and now is creating Mighty, which is a cool company. Have we talked about Mighty, by the way?
Yeah,
Mighty Browser.
It's pretty awesome.
I think we talked about it, so yeah, we'll skip that for now. Anyways, good entrepreneur, cool guy, whatever. He tweeted this thing out, and my tweet's not loading right now, but I think it was something along the lines
here
of...
It's a, the tweet. What's a company you'd start if you had more energy, time, or a lot more money?
Right, so, which is basically like, if you took away your bullshit-ass reasons, what's the thing you really should be working on right now? And I find that to be a very interesting question. I have another question that's similar to that, so maybe we'll do both these questions today. So I went through the replies, and I want to read you 5 of my favorite replies, and I want you to just give me a gut reaction, hell yeah, hell no, or I don't fucking get it. Okay, so the first one came from Gary Tan, who's a, you know, big shot investor guy, first investor in Coinbase, made like $1 billion on that. So he said a reference check network. Do you know what that means just when I say just that?
Yeah. So, well, the problem being solved is how to get, like, if he's going to want to invest in someone. Hey, does anyone know, is this person honest?
Right. Or you're hiring somebody and you want to know, okay, yeah, you worked at this place. How do I get a reference check? So normally today you ask the employee, they give you 3 names. Of course, those are the 3 people that are only going to say good things, which is kind of annoying in the first place. So you can't really get the right people. Then you kind of have to bug them. There's no real incentive for them except for to maybe help out their ex-employee. And then you have to think of whatever questions you're going to ask. Most people ask pretty poor questions, but there are better ways of doing it. And in the end, you're just trying to get this fuzzy picture of, like, you know, is this person any good or not? So that can be done better. And I think he had some solution in mind, which is like something on the blockchain, which was just like, you are able to, like, I'm able to have people who are linked to me. Somebody can go and request a reference from them. Maybe there's a little payment made. I'm not sure. And then they share information, but it's not publicly shared. It's just shared privately with me, given the context of, you know, who's the employee and what this job is. So I thought that was all right. I thought it was a really, really specific one that I thought was cool. Because there was a lot of, like, I'd solve clean energy. And, like, I don't really know what to do with that idea. Yeah. Like, it's not that that's a bad mission. It's just like, what the fuck am I supposed to say about that? Okay. Somebody else said, create the largest employer of high school students in the U.S. What do you think of that?
Sick. Sick. Yeah, I mean, that sounds awesome. Yes. Yeah. I mean, what is that now? McDonald's? Yeah, like I mean, and that, yeah,
probably honestly, I guess
it might be like McDonald's. I don't know what that would be. I talked to these guys who were building a company. I forget what it was called. You probably know what it was, but it's basically like an Indeed.com, but it's meant for teens, and it looks like TikTok and like Panda Express and McDonald's and like PacSun were all advertising on it, and you could like scroll through and look at job opportunities.
Yeah, I want to say it was called like Peach something or like Lemon something or something like that.
I don't remember. I don't remember, but Panda Express was like spending a ton of money on it. Anyway, yeah, I think that's cool.
I think it's a great idea. It's a great prize to go for.
I actually would say that this is like an interesting framework, which is who do you want to employ?
100%. I've been saying this for a long time, which is anybody who could figure out how to employ the stay-at-home mom workforce is going to make billions of dollars. So if you just work backwards from, there's a bunch of moms who are at home, they want to earn a little extra income, doesn't have to be a ton. They want to maintain flexibility of being able to stay at home and work not like necessarily a fixed number of full-time hours or the same hours every day. Who can solve that problem? And there's only one example that I know of that's solving that problem. I don't know if you know any.
For moms?
Yeah.
Maybe uservoice.com. I think they do it.
User testing.
Usertesting.com.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Oh, is it really?
My mom worked for them. Yeah. So.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
I knew about it.
What a random thing that we both knew that. So I would say, so usertesting.com is an amazing company, by the way. So you just pay someone to like go through your website.
They just went public, by the way. And how cool is this? They just went public. And my mom stock, and my mom was like,
say what it is.
So user testing, basically it's a service where I have an app or a website. I want to know where it's confusing for users. Like the design makes sense to me, but like, sure enough, when somebody else is using it, they're confused. They can't find the thing they want.
And they just record your mom like scrolling through the site.
So they have an army of testers, which is just all the requirement is be a normal person. We do not even want you to be highly skilled. Like you're supposed to represent the average customer. So they have a bunch of people, they send them a little camera that records their finger on their phone, basically. It records them like, and they just talk out loud. So you give a task, you say like, find a Christmas gift for your dad and put it into your cart. And they're like, okay, I'm looking for the gifts for dad section. I don't see it. Scrolling. They don't see the button that says menu. Oh, there's the menu. Dad. Oh, it's men's. Okay, I'll click men's. Yeah, I don't get how this is sorted. Oh, this is by new release. And you just talk through what's confusing to you. And that 15-minute video goes to the company, and the company gets to watch it, and they get to share it internally. Their researcher basically shares it with the designer or the engineer.
And they pay like $300 for it, right?
No. Each test is like $25 or $30. And then now it's all switched to subscription. But originally it was like $25, $30 a test. The tester gets $10 for doing the test, and the company kept, $15, $20. And so the tester's like, cool, I could do like four of these in an hour. And so a bid would come online. Oh, Chipotle wants you to test their new mobile menu. And you would just have to go quickly say yes. And then you qualify. They're looking for women, age 40 to 55 in the US. And you're like, yeah, great. I qualify. I can take this test.
And that's a $1 billion company now. Its market cap is over $1 billion. Did your mom get paid? Did they give her shares?
Yeah, it's awesome. So basically my mom she first started off as a tester. Then she got hired by the company to review the other testers because you have to do quality control. So she became like, she would watch the tests and give feedback to the testers of like, hey, your audio sucks, or like you're mumbling, or like you didn't follow the instructions of the test. One more strike and you're out of the testing pool. And so that was her job. And she was the oldest person in the company, I think. So she was like, my mom's like 63 now. So she just retired this year. So she was there at 62 years old. My mom like had Slack and like knew how to use all like Jira. She knew what a Jira ticket was. Like, it was crazy. My mom, like, who knew? And she got some shares, and she had always told me like, should I? And I was like, yeah, you want the shares for sure. And then she would tell me like, hey, the CEO did an all hands. He said this. Is that good? I'm like, yeah, it sounds good. Like, this company's doing well. I should have bought secondary stock in the company during that time, because I had like basically inside info of like, this company's pretty good. This is a good quality company. And I was a user of the service as well. So it goes public the other day, like 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, mom, how many shares do you have? And she goes, looks in Carta. She tells me your shares. I'm like, mom, you made $150,000 off this.
No way.
And she's like, yeah, because her strike price was super low. She was there for like 4 or 5 years. And so I was like, that's amazing. That's my mom was so happy.
Good for her. That's badass.
Found money.
And so like, this is why I think this model of who do you want to employ is actually interesting, because it's actually, it's two for two reasons. It's motivating. So like the fact that like they are employing I have no idea. I'm just make this up. If it's like mostly women who stayed at home for a long time and now they want to get back to it, that's like incredibly motivating. It's like, look, we're serving our employees. Yeah, it's very noble. It's cool. Let's say you want to hire ex-cons or something. It's like, look, this is interesting. Or we're going to hire a bunch of 16-year-olds and it's going to be the first job. We're going to train them how to be men and women and prepare them for the rest of their lives. It's actually incredibly cool. It's fascinating.
There's one, I want to look up the name, give them a shout out here. So it's you hire military wives as EAs.
That's awesome.
It's called...
And it also helps with expectations. So you know what you're what's it called?
Squared Away.
Squared Away.
And
that's cool.
Basically a woman. I think her story is that I'm assuming she was in this position. I don't really know. But basically it's military spouses. And I was like, this is a great idea. Because you know, this is US, these are US employees. They want this work. They, it's great to provide for their family while, you know, the husband's away. I just think it's awesome. And it
helps significantly with expectations because then user testing knows, all right, we're mostly going to be hiring 60-year-old or 50-year-old women who don't have probably a ton of experience with Slack and Jira. So now we know what we're getting into.
Right.
Or
we know our processes. We know how to hire. The culture is good. They all get along.
Yeah.
It's like like-mindedness.
Or if we're hiring a ton of 17-year-old high school kids, like we know, like here's the deficiencies and here's where they kick ass. Right. Or if we're hiring guys out of jail, we know like here's where they're going to struggle, here's where not going to struggle. So that's cool. What are some other great ones on here? That's a good one. It's kind of vague, but pretty cool.
I'll do two more. We'll do one. VR therapy. So VR is not there for like mainstream use cases. The average person's not coming home and spending a couple hours of VR. There's a few, there are some people who do it. They like to play games. But VR is really awesome for training. Like I know medical schools buy it so that the doctor can be like in the operating room and they can make a highly lifelike simulation. And I think therapy is a good one too. So being able to put a headset on and really like change your environment, change the state of mind, be able to go role play through scenarios or talk to somebody and feel like you're there with them. I think that's kind of amazing. And so I look forward to seeing like VR with these like really specific high value use cases until like the mainstream thing is ready.
Dude, I'm down with that. I also think I could conquer a bunch of phobias like with that.
Right.
So I'm down. I think that's cool.
Like I know that like athletes are doing this. So like, there's this great, we both love UFC and MMA and NFL is this way also, but there's this phrase that Conor McGregor's coach always says, which is you want to upgrade the software without damaging the hardware. So it's like, how do you train and improve without putting strain on the body, hurting your body, because training is so physically grueling. So one way that they're doing it in the NFL is VR headsets. So the quarterback, instead of just watching film, their first person reading the defense without having to go stretch, get their ankles taped up, go out on the field, potentially, sprain a knee or get hit. It's like they get to practice reading the defense and all the different coverages just in VR. And then when they get out there on the field, like it's that same first person point of view, being able to turn your head and you're only seeing parts of the field. Like it's like pretty much like a one-to-one recreation. I think that's kind of awesome. I want to know which company is doing that. I'm sure there's a company doing that.
My favorite videos on YouTube to watch right now are they take folks who play racing sims, so racing simulations with VR sets, and they have these like amazing setups at home that are like $10,000, $20,000, right. $50,000, and then they go and put them in a race car. And they do,
do they
really
suck or are they good?
No, they do really well. It takes them like in all the videos I've seen, it takes them 5, 10, 20 minutes to like get used to the noise and get used to like the smell and just the slightly different sensation, but they pick it up super fast. And so it's guys who have actually never raced before and they get them out there and they give them the fast cars and they pick that shit up. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Like I think even stuff as boring as sales, I think you could practice sales in a much more lifelike way. I know that teachers are doing this for like how to talk to your student about if they're feeling depressed or if they're being bullied. It's like you sit there, a student walks in, you can see their face, they're saying something, and then you have to react, and then you have to like, you're kind of like choosing what to say live. You get to practice before you go do the real thing.
That's cool. Any other good ones?
There was a couple other ambitious ones. So there's a terraformation one. We've talked about this before, which is taking just deserts on Earth and turning them into like rainforests, basically turning them into forests, like creating a green oasis of trees there. And like that cleans up, that sucks up a bunch of carbon dioxide from the environment. So it cleans up, you know, the air, as well as like turns it into livable land. And so like, if we can learn how to terraform, which is basically like turn, you know, unlivable land into livable land, that's going to help Earth, but it'll also help when we finally do make it to Mars and we need to turn that into a hospitable place. We're going to need to know how to do terraformation. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And there's another one like that, like drone based wildfire fighting. So like sending in drones to put out wildfires. I think that's pretty cool too.
I think that's great. Those are really neat. What's another one? What's this legal question for $5 million?
This I thought was cool. All right. So as you know, I'm a TikTok binger nowadays. And TikTok is the only social media that like when I leave it, I feel better than when I came in. Everything else, like Facebook, feel awful at the end. Instagram, I feel like, oh man, my brain is rotting. Twitter, I'm like, oh, it was a waste of time just dealing with a bunch of people's bad thoughts. And TikTok is really, I cannot believe how much I enjoy it. Like,
is it just entertainment?
It's addictive. It's entertainment, but there's a lot of education. Like, I learned a lot of shit off TikTok. Now, it's all little life stuff. It's like, you know, like, I don't know, stupid examples, but like, hey, if you ever take a photo and you see that, like, you know, where your eye, like when you take a photo, your eye can have like a red, like, you know, you look kind of evil, like the camera has that flash or whatever, like a red dot. If that's ever white, you should go to the doctor, because there's actually like a very, like there's a chance that that's a very bad thing. And then this guy was replying saying, actually, I had heard that. I saw a photo like the end of that. I went to the doctor. It turns out I had eye cancer. He's like, I actually had my eye removed, but like it saved my life that we found it early. And I don't know, just random shit. That to like, you know, just quickly seeing like how an avocado gets to your door. It's like, oh, cool. This farmer TikTok is dope. Like parenting TikTok is great. It's like, oh, when your kid is just not listening, how many times have you done this? I'm like, yeah, fuck, that's me. And they're like, here's a better way to say it. And I'm like, thanks. You know, parent I never had to teach me how to do this really important thing in my life. Like, you just learn little shit. So anyways, I was on it and there's this account called Legal Baddie. Legal Baddie is just like some hot lawyer. And she's like, here's my question for you. She goes, if I told you that you were going to make $5 million a year as your salary, regardless of what you do. So you're just, you were going to work 30, 40 hours a week. You're going to make a fixed rate of $5 million a year. What would you choose to do as your work? Like, you still have to work to get it. What would you choose as your job? And obviously this is like, you know, a hidden question of kind of like, what do you actually really enjoy to do if money wasn't an issue? But you still had to work, right? So there's one of like, oh, if I had $100 million, well, then maybe I wouldn't work at all. Like maybe I would just do blah, blah, blah. This is like, you have to work to earn this, but no matter what job you do, you're going to earn the same amount. So which job?
By the way, I'm looking at her profile. I love Legal Baddie. I love this woman.
Why? Just her look? What do you like?
She's just like,
she's a baddie.
So this woman's a lawyer. Is that her shtick?
Yeah, I think she's a lawyer. Otherwise,
I just think she's crushing
legal
it.
Legal means something else. I don't know what's going on.
If this woman,
maybe she's 19 and that's why she's going.
First gen lawyer from UCLA law. I think it's amazing. She's probably making more money off TikTok. And totally. Like, she's like, I particularly like it with women, but I like it with men too, where they talk about like cool shit, like passing the bar exam or whatever. But then like she's got all a bunch of nail shit. I always think it's cool where like you can break that barrier of like smut and cool stuff and also like legitimate life helping content. I always thought that was cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm with you. So she has 500,000 followers on here, and like, you know, her top videos have, you know,
yeah, she's like doing like purposely hot girl stuff and then also like telling you how to get into law school. I always think that's cool.
Law school and then downer dog, then back to quick bar exam tip, and then back to my favorite name.
And like here's like a pretty racy bikini video of her.
Right.
So yeah,
she knows what she's doing, right? Like, let's credit where credit is due. She is giving the market what it wants.
I love
she's
this lady.
A differentiated thing. All right, she's not just one of the like kind of like TikTok hot girl in a bikini or whatever. Like, she layered it with another, like that, what the skill stack, as you call it, right? How rare is that? There's not a lot of lawyers on TikTok. There's not a lot of hot girls. Both, she might be the only one, right? So she's competing in a pool of one.
And there's this video of her talking in front of like C-SPAN, like some type of press. I love this. Anyway, I love her. So what's the question? $5 million. Okay. What would your job be?
Yeah. What would you do for your job if you were for sure going to get paid $5 million? What would you just choose to do for that 30, 40 hours a week?
What's your answer?
Now I want to hear yours first.
I don't know.
What comes to mind?
$5 million a year, and you have to have like a 40-hour a week job, right?
Yeah.
Definitely something involving like charity. So like something involving not making money. So if I can get $5 million and all I have to do is like spend time like running a dog shelter or
that's awesome.
I would do that in a heartbeat. If I could pay
not what I thought you were gonna say.
If I could do $5 million to like run like a dog rescue, I would do that in a heartbeat. Or to help inmates, ex-inmates find jobs. I think that would be exciting. Or even like people like everything we just discussed about helping stay-at-home moms get employment. Anything that involves helping people and not making money, I would do that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, mine's kind of similar. Mine's kind of boring. I would probably teach. Like, I just love teaching. So I would teach. Now, the question is, what would I teach? I think I would teach kind of like business/life stuff to people who want to actually, like, they're really motivated to have a great life and have a great like kind of business career. And so those are the people I like hanging out with the most. And that's the thing I like doing the most, is basically learning shit and then just, you know, packaging it up and then teaching it to others and answering questions, you know, talking things through basically with people, figuring stuff out. So I think that's probably what I would do. But I feel like, you know, your dog shelter thing made me think, oh, maybe there's an even more lightweight, just pure enjoyment. Like, maybe actually I know what it would probably be. I would be like I'd be a basketball coach, or I would be like like whatever the F- basketball league is. Like, I'd be a basketball player. Like,
that'd be sick.
What's the thing
that
I have the absolute most fun doing is playing basketball, and like second best would be coaching a basketball team.
This woman, legal baddie, has another question. Would you rather have $10 million today or $100 million in 5 years? That's the easiest question ever.
Which one would you take?
105.
Yeah, exactly. 105 is great. It gets, if it's 50, I think it's a lot closer.
It gets a lot closer at 50, because 50 could turn into 100 in 5 years in a bull 50, market.
10 will turn into 20, but also you got to have 10 now, and you didn't have to wait 5 years of your life, which is, you know, pretty significant. But yeah, I think my answer is I'd be on some Gordon Bombay shit, and I'd go do my Mighty Ducks thing with some, like, you know, high school team.
I think that's a good answer. You want to do a few more?
Let's do something else. Let's do a couple ideas. So, business idea. All right. Problem I just ran into. Sending a gift to your production partner, your factory partner, overseas. Okay. Sending gifts in general is hard. Sending gifts overseas, even harder. Because like, just like the act of mailing things and like, oh, I want to send them like, you know, bottle of wine for Christmas or what. It's like, I can't mail that. How do I do this? I gotta look up UPS's like alcohol shipment, you know, rules and make sure it doesn't crack and all this. So I was searching, like, I'd like to send my factory a gift in China. Is there just like a version of DoorDash in China? I could just like go look at what they have, push a button, and they'll just deliver it to them. And like,
that's
boom, it's done. And I actually found this like really janky website. I'm going to find the name of it. But basically I found this like old school looking Craigslist looking website, and it was, we send gifts to your business partners in East Asia. And it's like, that's all we do. Browse. Here's like 50 gift baskets ranging from like balling out to like, we just met. And, you know, you want to spend $40? You want to spend $400? You could pick. And they just say, great. What? And then their address field is like formatted for Chinese address. It's like, you know, like, it's like, it just, it's optimized where you have confidence that they will actually deliver the goods. And I'm not going to have to worry about logistics. I'm just going to be able to put in some money, and I'm going to have a thoughtful gift to my factory partner. So I like this idea because, okay, there's probably some amount of people like me that are searching for this. Like, okay, it's Christmas. I want to get a gift for my business partner. But
do they not have, can you not order an Amazon thing and send it to China?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe I could have just done something as simple as that. I don't think so, but maybe there's like, maybe I needed to go on Taobao and like figure that out.
Yeah, but that's
Taobao
a pain in the account. Ass. Cause I don't even know what Taobao is.
Exactly. This was like, pay with PayPal, you're done. And I was like, great. This is what I wanted. And it was also like organized as a gift. So it wasn't just like an item where they're just going to get it in a shitty Amazon box. It's like, it looks like a gift. It's in a gift care package, which is nice. That's like the goal of what I was trying to do. It's like edible arrangements to China is what I was trying to do, essentially. So I sent it, and I was just thinking, you could just do this and then do like cold outreach to like the 1 million Shopify stores and be like, hey, you know what's a good idea? You should send your factory, you know, your manufacturing partner a gift basket, and like, you know, it costs $50. It goes a long way. You know, these people, you know, they're key to your business, and steady show, blah, blah, blah. And gifting is a big thing in China. It shows respect. Don't be rude. And like, you could do that 3 times a year. Like, oh, it's,
that's,
you
know,
Chinese New Year. It's whatever else. And I think just through outbound, you could create like probably like a $1 million a year revenue business, maybe $3 million a year in like 2 weeks. I think you could create that.
So listen to this crap. So the other day we got a mattress delivered to our front door, a Zinus mattress. It's huge. And it had Sarah's name on it. I go, Sarah, why'd you order a mattress? She goes, I didn't order a mattress. And I'm like, we got to find out who sent this mattress, because we can't open this up, because if you open it up, it's a pain in the butt. We're just going to keep it in the box, maybe send it back, or we'll sell it for like $200 or give it to a friend.
Yeah. So here's like a heavy ass, huge box.
Huge.
That you can't open and you don't know where it came from.
Yes. And it says Zinus, so I know it's a cloud mattress. I don't even know what size of mattress it is. Okay, I got to open it up. And she posts on Twitter, and Nick Huber, sweaty startup, says, that was from me. And I go, oh, very funny. And he goes, no, that was seriously from me. We wanted you to know, I invested into his storage business.
Yeah.
And he said, we wanted you to be able to sleep well at night, knowing that your money is like being taken care of. And I was like, well, I appreciate the sincerity. That's lovely.
Yes.
Who the hell has a, like, I don't have like a spare,
an unmattressed bed.
Yeah. Like, I don't have an unmattressed bed. Like, what were you thinking? Like, maybe a blender would have been cool, or like just chocolate, like
a pillow.
A pillow would have been, yeah, like a fancy pillow. I could use another one of those. He gave me an extra mattress. And so we've been texting our friends, like, does anyone need a mattress?
Yeah, he created a pain in the ass for you.
Yes. I'm like, dude, just send me chocolate covered nuts. Or, you know what I mean? Like, give me like some flavored, like some weird fruit or something. I don't want a fucking mattress. He sent me a mattress. I've got this huge mattress in the front door.
Pound problem.
And I've got guests coming on Friday, and I'm like looking like a redneck with this mattress on my front
bed.
We have a bed. They're staying in the bed that's already in the guest room. And I'm like, look like an idiot. I look like a country bumpkin with just a mattress on my front door. And I'm like, oh, just ignore that. We'll get rid of it. So I'm on board with better gifting. Nick Huber, this will make it to you. I really appreciate the gesture, though. It was very nice. But like, maybe like peanut butter cups and like chocolate covered nuts and like some chocolate turtles would be more sufficient.
I love it. All right. So that's one quick idea. The factory gift idea with the outbound outreach to every FBA and Amazon seller, a Shopify seller. And I think you could side hustle your way into $1 million a year doing that. OK, here's another random thing. Have you ever seen EMF protected pants?
Is that for your computer on your balls?
Is that your phone? Yeah.
No,
EMF. It might be EM something else, electromagnetic, whatever, radiation.
I'm on board with this, though. I hate, like, I don't know. It's EMF. The studies, I don't know exactly what it is, but like basically having your laptop on your lap and that heat is right. Not, I don't know if it's radiation or what it is. It like has proven to kill your sperm. Another thing, like wearing whitey tighties, you know, like tight underwear where too your tight, balls yeah. are against your body, that actually kills your sperm because it heats your body up too much.
Let them baby swang. You know what I mean? You can't, the bird's got to fly.
Yes.
You can't keep them in the nest. So I've noticed that there's a few people in my life who they're like the canary in the coal mine. Like they kind of get really into stuff. And when they first say, I'm like, why are you even thinking about this? Why do you even care about this? You're one of these people, by the way, where it's like, dude, Sam just got really into fucking mobility and like, you know, stretching. He's like got really serious about like ripped dudes who want to stretch and be like super mobile. Or it'll be like, you know, he's on this kick about like really wanting like toughness challenges. Like life is too good. He's too soft. So he's craving this like core primal challenge in his life. Is that just Sam being Sam? And actually what it ends up being is like Sam being ahead of the curve by like 3 years. And it's going to be proven to be like quite popular. There's a few people in my life that are like that. My brother-in-law is like this. You're like this. My trainer, I've learned, is one of these people where he'll say something and he's like, you know, super into this thing. I'm like, I've never, like, he'll be like, oh yeah, dude, I take Kratom. It's like, oh, Kratom? Like, what the fuck's Kratom? Like, do you know what Kratom is?
No.
It's like basically, so he's big into like these like kind of supplements, nootropics, which like, you know, if the promise of them is amazing, but you like can't tell if they work or not. Uh-huh. Like people who believe in them are like, oh, this feels great. But it's that thing we talked about before. It's like the best product in the world is CBD for dogs, because
yeah, it's the
best. You think you're giving them, you know, pain relief, but you'll never know if it does anything. And like CBD for humans is like that too, but the dogs can't talk. And so there's a whole bunch of these like kind of nootropics or supplements that's like, oh yeah, I take lion's mane and I take like, you know, fucking milk of magnesia, or I don't know, whatever. Just a bunch of random ass names. And then later, like he said, he was telling me about like Tonga Lee. And then Dr. Huberman came on. He's like, yeah, I don't do testosterone anymore. I get it from these other like more natural herbs like Tonga Lee and whatever. I was like, dude, there's only two people in my life that I've ever said this name, Tonga Ali, and like it's these two people. And so I've just noticed he's ahead of the curve on a lot of these, whether it's like fashion, fitness, supplements, nootropics, you know, like books that he's into. And so on the supplement side, he's like really this thing called Kratom, which is kind of like a Advil. Like you take it instead of Advil. So it's like kind of like, helps with your aches and pains without the side effects of like
doesn't like thin your blood or hurt your kidneys.
Yeah, like you're bad for your liver and shit like that.
Yeah.
And so anyways, where I'm going with this. Okay, so he's like, oh yeah, dude, he's got his fashion line coming out where he's like making clothes. Basically just like I'm his only customer right now because it's like not released, but I just get to have a bunch of his shit and I'm like, oh, this is amazing. He's like, yeah, the shorts on these, the pockets have like EMF protection. And I was like, what? And he's like, oh yeah, like I'm big into like, you know, just why not? Why not have EMF protection? And I was like, from like, he's like, yeah, your phone's in your pocket all day, is right next to your balls. Like, you just don't want that. You know, I want to have kids. I don't want to be having all this stuff there. And I'm like, I guess you're right. I guess
it's pretty sick.
That's so normal. Everybody puts in their pocket. So like, is there something to be worried about? And I call this FUDware. FUD, which stands for fear, uncertainty, and doubt. So
Did you make that up?
Yeah, there's a general trend I'm creating here called FUDware. And I think that FUDware is going to be anything that's like, oh yeah, you know, like blue blocker glass, like light glasses, EMF radiation proof pants. You know, it's like, you know, like, and that's not to say that they're all like, it's not to say that any of this is false. Like it might be totally true, but it's basically preying on people that are, when you tell them, oh, did you know that paraben, you should never have aluminum in your deodorant. And they're like, what? Aluminum? Am I going to die? All right. I'm never using Old Spice. I'll use native deodorant instead. It's like paraben free. It's like, what the fuck's a paraben? But I guess I've heard parabens are bad for you, you know? Like that guy who came on the show and he was like, oh yeah, I don't drink out of plastic because, you know, phthalates.
I don't drink out of plastic either.
And it's like, but yeah, it's still super common, but the smart people I know are like starting to say this word phthalate. I never heard this word before, but I'm starting to hear this. And it tells me there's a bunch of people that as they become aware, they're going to start to steer away.
Or Teflon pans.
Right, exactly. Like the nonstick or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think there's just a whole class of products that are just FUDware. And you can just find the next FUD of like, what are people afraid of? It's like, oh, like they want to do like UV cleaning of their phone and their toys because UV kills, you know, COVID and, you know, UV red lights.
That's a great one. FUDware. That's fantastic. So a few more like the water filters. So there's those charcoal silver water filters that are everywhere. Totally. I think Justin Mayer said he tried to get a built like a huge one. So all of his home water goes through this thing.
Yeah. What he said called? He has like an intense, I asked him, I go, what do you do for water? He goes, I go way over, but I have like a 12-foot tall system that's filtering my
water.
Berkeley? I don't know what it's called. But when Rob Dyrdek was on, he said that too. He's like, I'm making a shower head filter company. Cause like, oh yeah, what if I found out that I'm showering in fucking toxic chemicals? Well, then I'm going to buy this attachment that purifies it. Like if you just put a little seed of doubt into my brain, I'm going to be like, yeah, why not? I'm just going to add on the side of safety.
And on in the same realm with that. And I would want to look into this, but I think laptops on men laps is like a massive issue.
Right.
It could potentially be quite big.
You could just make a whole company just protecting men's balls. from like, you know, the modern day, you know, harm. It's like, yeah, here's a laptop tray that's like fucking made out of kryptonite. And it's like, you can't pass through this. Here's your shorts. Put your put it in this pocket. It won't fry your balls. You know, wear this underwear because, you know, your underwear has, you know, cotton phosphors. It's like, what's a cotton phosphor? I don't know. Sean just made it up, but it's bad for your balls. And so it's like,
did you just make that up? That's good.
Sounded good, right?
Dude, I'm telling you, the heat, it does freak me out. Like having that heat, like I feel it and I'm like, oh, this is horrible for me. So I have like a pad, like I put a pad on my lap.
There's a small, you know, pomade you need to apply to your balls every night before you sleep. Cause you know that when you sleep, the gravity pulls your balls and it's bad for you. Like
how
I can make up an endless number of ball.
Okay. Here's this one that I saw these guys launch and they advertised with us early on. And I was like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. Why are you guys even doing this? And now it's a $1 billion company, Manscaped. Yeah. Have you heard about Manscaped?
I have. I asked a buddy, I said, what's one of the best investments in your portfolio? What are your best investments? And I thought he'd name some tech company, some cybersecurity company. He goes, oh, Manscaped is great. Because they raised like only a tiny amount of money and they're worth like, yeah, like close to $1 billion.
Is it a $1 billion company, you think?
I don't know. Something like that. It's worth
But they sponsored the UFC, and that's a really expensive sponsorship. And they sponsor a ton of stuff. If you told me that they do like $150 million in revenue, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it's definitely over $100 million in revenue.
You think it's over $200?
I mean, I don't know.
I've never used one. I told Sarah to buy one for me because I wanted one for my nose hair. And I think they have like.
Why did Sarah have to buy it for you? Why didn't you just buy it?
She wanted a Christmas present for. Okay. I told on my Christmas. I was like, give me like the nose hair one. I think they have a nose hair one.
All in one.
Is it all in one? I don't mind using.
They give you that cover. They give you that air cover to be like, yeah, I just want to trim my beard and my nose. And what do you know?
It comes with these other
attachments. Maybe your boy will start manscaping.
Yeah, I'm cool with using that on my face and on my. No, the nose one's different. But the Manscaped like buzzer, it's just a normal, I think it's just a normal buzzer. I don't know how it's actually different than like a normal hair.
It's much different.
And they crushed it. This cat, I never in a million years would have thought that this was going to work.
Yeah, it sounded like a joke when it came out. I remember just being like, oh, that's a funny joke of a company. Cool joke of the day for a startup.
Yes. And they kill it. They sponsor all the major like boxing and UFC stuff. These guys are killing it. And it doesn't look so. I'm on board with the protect your balls. That's a good business. And FUD is a phenomenal name. What does it stand for?
FUDware. FUD is fear, uncertainty, and doubt. So they say this in the market a lot. Like if people are like, "Oh, I heard China's going to ban Bitcoin," or like, "Isn't it true that like Satoshi was a part of the NSA?" It's like, "Oh, this is just FUD you're spreading to get people to be uncertain and doubt and sell their positions."
Dude, so, that's great. Like compression socks. I buy compression socks. That's FUDware. I have no idea if it works, but it's
what is it supposed to do?
Compression socks, when you run, I have calf pain and Achilles pain all the time. Compression socks are socks that you pull really high up to your knees and they have a lot of compression on it and it keeps your calves tight. So if you ever wear like compression shorts, like that tight underwear for your thighs, it's like that for your calves and ankles.
Gotcha. Okay. I like it. I dig it.
Can we wrap up with one thing? So recently, this Bitcoin thing, Craig Wright, I don't know much about it other than like one article I read. I guess he's an Australian guy and he was being sued by this person who wanted a share of the money for what's the story?
I don't know about his lawsuit, but I know about Craig Wright and that he basically for a long time has been claiming to be Satoshi Nakamoto.
So he
claims to be the creator of Bitcoin. And then people who are smart in the community are like, there's no fucking way.
So people, but this lawsuit, basically, he's being sued by the spouse of someone. This Craig Wright had a partner. The partner died and the spouse of the partner sued Craig Wright. And Craig Wright won the lawsuit. And in winning
for what?
She said that you owe me money because of this reason and that reason. We created this. You and my husband created this thing together. You owe us some money. And in winning, I forget exactly how it worked, but in winning the case, the jurors said, well, no, you're Satoshi and you worked on this alone. And so like in order for him to win in a weird, I don't know the exact details, but in order for him to win, they were basically saying, yes, we believe you're Satoshi and Satoshi worked alone.
So, okay, here's the story. So Kleinman versus Wright, the jury ruled that David Kleinman's relationship to Craig Wright did not constitute a business partnership, meaning the estate was not entitled to a share of the Satoshi Nakamoto fortune, which Wright claims to have control over as the self-purported creator of Bitcoin. The jury ruled against Wright on the conversion count, awarding $100 million to Kleinman. What? Oh, ruled against Wright. Yeah. So they got $100 million out of it?
I don't know, because I thought he was celebrating. It was a little confusing. But the point was is that this like this legal team.
So, okay, they wanted billions. They didn't get that, but they got $100 million against him for the unauthorized use of funds from Kleinman and Wright's shared venture, W&K Info Defense Research LLC. Okay, this is from something else.
So is this guy the guy who started it? That's what I want to know.
So basically, he claims to have invented Bitcoin. Then there's a great clip, by the way, of Vitalik Buterin, the creator of Ethereum, co-creator of Ethereum, on stage. And he goes, They were talking about it, and usually people, like, you know, like in a conference panel, people are usually pretty, like, you know, they don't take shots at people like live there. And he just pipes up. He goes, "You want to know what I think?" And they're like, "Yes, we'd love to know what you think." He goes, and he gives this like quick, like 2 minute rant that just destroys Craig Wright, where he's like, "I think if you're the creator of Bitcoin, you have a very," and everybody was saying you're not, and you keep trying to tell people you are, "all you have to do is one simple thing. You just have to sign something with Satoshi's wallet, and that will just show that you're him. And the fact that you're not doing that," like he calls some Occam's razor or whatever, like just some term like that. He's like, "The simplest explanation here is that you're not Satoshi. Because if you have a simple way to prove your claim and you do not prove your claim using the simple way, you cannot prove your claim." And so he kind of just like shit on him right there.
So who
crowd went wild.
So who is this? You think he's died or he's still quiet?
The best theory is that it's this guy, Hal. I forgot what his name is. Hal Finney. Hal Finney was like a cryptographer. He received the first Bitcoin transaction. He was the second wallet. And normally, like, what does a developer do when they test something? That's like, "Oh, I send it from like Sean A to Sean B, like my test account, basically. Like, that's how I do the first transaction." And he was like very active in the forums. And then he died right around the time he got ALS and died around the time that the last known time that Satoshi ever posted anything. So, you know,
why wouldn't he tell? Do you think why wouldn't he like tell his wife or his family, or, you know, like, because it looks like he has a wife on these pictures.
Yeah. Maybe he did. And B, like, you know, some people are so mission driven in their thing, in their thinking. And like, you know, there's a real genius of the idea of being like, "I'm going to have this as a pseudonymous name, Satoshi Nakamoto. I'm not going to use my real name, which means I'll never get the credit for being a genius if this works." But also, it like, it's kind of like the parent dies so the child can survive. It's like, the only way a currency like this could have really worked is if you couldn't point to the creator, because then they would just attack the creator. They would say the creator has too much. They'd say this guy has ulterior motives. He has control. He's too powerful to, you know, he's just the new bad guy. You know, okay, you're bad at the Federal Reserve and the governments. Yeah, now you're bad at this guy for a private citizen being in control of this. So,
and you think this is him?
I personally think it's him. Like, I've looked into a couple times about like who are the most likely candidates. You know, is it a group of people? Was it the government themselves? Was it one person? And it does seem like it was there's really no evidence of the existing evidence that's there. This is kind of like speculative data points you have. Hal Finney fits the story in my worldview the best. So I think it's him.
God, I love these mysteries.
Which would mean that it's sort of gone. Like, his coins are locked up.
Unless forever. He gave them to his wife.
Unless he gave her the keys, and like, you know, and she and told her, "Don't touch it, because it hasn't moved. Not a single coin has moved ever." And, you know, I think if he did it, let's say he did give her instructions, how would I give instructions? I would say, I would probably not actually let her have it. I would say, "This file is going to be available to you on this date, 20 years from now." And I would say, you know, follow the instructions inside. So I wouldn't even give her the opportunity to make a bad decision. Because I would say, if these move before Bitcoin wins, then this will be very destructive for it. Like, if the creator of Bitcoin starts to sell Bitcoin, that will trigger like a huge sell off in the market. Because it'll be like, "Oh, the creator's alive. They don't believe they're selling their coins. Who is it?" It'll create this like whole drama. It'll hurt the project.
But has any money ever left his account?
No, not a single Satoshi has ever left his account.
So then he would have had to have create a different account for her to live on or something.
Yeah. Which could have easily happened. Yeah. Right. You know, at some point, but you know, people can also see the ledger. So they know who all Satoshi sent they know which wallets Satoshi sent coins to. And, some of them are like known identities, like the other people that were in this like crypto, like the cypherpunk community that wanted to test out the project early on. But like, you know, he very easily could have just had her set up a mining rig. So it didn't even have to come from his account. He could just say it, because he didn't give himself the coins. He mined the coins.
Sure.
It's just that mining was so easy at that time. So, you know, she could be miner number 8, you know, that mined some coins, and that's it.
She can live off that.
Yeah.
God, how
fascinating. Well, we should see, like, you know, how's Finney? How's she living? Is she like in a, and a $40 million home in Venice.
I don't even know if he, I mean, there's a woman with all these pictures with him. Like, it looks like a wife. I don't even know anything about her. I just Googled. It doesn't say anything about Wikipedia about his wife. But, oh yeah, his wife raised, yeah, so he does have Ryan a wife. Finney. Yeah, I'd be curious. I'm looking at pictures of his house when he's dying, like pictures of him dying and he's in his home. It does not look fancy.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, ALS just looks so brutal, man.
Yeah. It feels like the worst.
Completely debilitated. That's really tough.
Yeah. So anyway, that's fascinating. We should do like an entire episode on that. This shit is so interesting to me.
Yeah, I agree. We should just do the research of like, okay, what is all the research that's out there? And like, what's the conclusion? I think people are, I'm fascinated by like this story. I think it's one of the coolest fucking straight out of a movie, but it's actually real life things that has ever happened. You know,
I like that and Silk Road, but I think the Silk Road case is far more cut and dry than anyone thinks. I think Ross did it. I think Ross did everything.
Right.
You know what I mean?
What's the controversy? People think what?
Many people were running it. Dred Scott Pirate, whatever the what's the name? Dred Pirates Roberts or whatever.
Yeah.
They're saying that was multiple people. And whenever I post about Ross Ulbricht, people are like, free Ross. And I'm like, well, like, he did kind of hire people to kill one another, like other people. Like, I don't know. Like,
what you have you seen the comments? So you have a YouTube video about your story.
Yeah, they Ross. Hate. And they're like,
the they're comments like, are like, there's like an army of people that love Ross and hate anybody that says anything bad. You didn't even say anything bad.
I didn't say anything bad. I said, I think he did it. But right. but my thing is like, I mean, he sold drugs. So there's some consequence to that. Not life, but some consequence. But if you did like murder for hire, yeah, life is definitely fair. If you do it three times, totally fair.
Right.
And when like I read that book, American Kingpin, and I looked at some of the evidence and I'm like, yeah, there were some bad cops working on the case and those guys got in trouble. But it definitely seems like this guy did it. I don't understand how there's any shadow of a doubt.
Right. By the way, Fran Finney's Twitter bio, and we'll just leave it on this note. She says, I graduated from Caltech. I spent 35 amazing years married to Hal Finney, who lived with ALS from 2009 to 2014.
Currently living in Dubai.
I vow to spend the rest of my life making him proud. I thought that was nice.
Yeah, man. She seems like a sweetheart. And
I'll show
turns
that
to
my wife. Be like, hey.
It turns out she
never
like,
happens to me.
Drives like a Ferrari and a Bugatti and like only wears Gucci.
I vow to spend the rest of my life in these fresh ass Gucci's.
Yeah, Gucci life. Yeah.
Dude, this is hilarious. You see this? Did you ever see that meme? You know that guy Hezbollah, the little
I
guy?
I love him.
So he tweeted out this thing. He goes, man, people say I had this, people always talk about my disability. Did you see this meme?
Yes. And what did he say?
He goes, yeah, I got disability to make that bread. And it's a picture of him holding a huge block of cash. Yeah. He's like, disability to make this money.
I love that kid. He's not a kid. Right. I think he's like 20.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. I'm going to get canceled. Just trying to describe anything about him without being offensive. So I'm just not going to say anything. All right, let's roll. I'm out of here.